Hello and welcome to the inaugural Charlie and Hannah podcast. I am Charlie Jewell, your Radio St. Pete film critic, and with me today is Hannah Bookdahl from chickflix.net. Hello, Hannah.
Hello.
Welcome, 2016.
Thank you. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. And we thought since it's the beginning of 2016, what better way to start the new year than talk about the old?
That's right.
We are going to talk about our top 10 favorite, most outstanding films of 2015. Hannah, did you make your list?
I did make my list, and I've got to just say off the bat that I've decided I do not like top 10 lists because 10 is just a weird number. Why 10? I think I had around 14 movies that I would consider my favorites.
Top 14?
Yeah, it was about 14.
All right.
But nobody does a top 14 list.
Well, I think we found our new market.
That's right.
Top 14.
You got it.
First off, tell us a little bit about chickflix.net.
Chickflix.net is a site that is run by me and another woman in Asheville, North Carolina. She is Artie Chick, and I am Mainstream Chick. And the premise is that we will review any movie from the chick's perspective. So it doesn't need to be a traditional chick flick.
I always wondered why you were not that interested in my opinion.
But I'll tell you, actually, a good portion of our readership are roosters. So we don't feel that you have to be a chick to appreciate the way that we review things. And my reviews personally are just sort of short, accessible reviews that I consider to be gut check reviews from a mainstream perspective.
Fair enough. And I think it points to why we have completely polar opposite opinions about pretty much any film we see. If I love it, you hate it. If
Absolutely.
You love it, I hate it. And I think it's because you're the mainstream chick and I'm kind of an arty guy.
Exactly. I think you'd probably be in line with arty chick on most things, but I do appreciate that I know that if you like something, I don't have to worry about going to see it.
I'm glad you can be so sure.
Except every once in a while, I think there's a mainstream arty divide that we can meet, so who knows? Maybe it's on the list.
Let's find out. Hannah, I'm nervous. I want to hear your list. So wow me with your number 10 favorite film of the year.
Okay, so my number 10 is different than you probably thought my number 10 was because things have changed a little bit over the past few weeks. But I put it number 10, Bridge of Spies.
I think this is going to be a recurring thing. I'm going to call it safe.
Yes, it is a safe movie, but that's also why it comes in at number 10. I think that it is a movie that appeals to a lot of people. It's a good old-fashioned spy flick. But I also do think that if you like this one, you would also like Man from U.N.C.L.E. If I could make it a tie, I think Man from U.N.C.L.E. is the more entertaining of the two. And if you're in the mood for a more entertaining spy flick, I would choose Man from U.N.C.L.E. If you want a more traditional Cold War, then Bridge of Spies does the trick.
I like them both. You can't go wrong with Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks, but it's just, it wasn't boring, but I feel like I've seen it before. It's not their best.
It's not their best, and we haven't seen it in a while. And so I think there's something to be said for a good formula reemerging and just being a good basic crowd pleaser that doesn't make you leave feeling that it was depressing or, you know, where you're just, you just feel good. It was just a good, solid, safe movie. Number 10 worthy.
Number 10 worthy. And thank you for bringing up The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I love that movie. It's funny. I laughed, even though it's in the Cold War and people are trying to kill each other. And it's got Alicia Vikander in it, my 2015 favorite actress.
I forgot it had her in it as well. This is definitely her year, but it also has a very hot, suave Henry Cavill.
Yeah, that too. All right, my number 10, I think, is going to surprise you a little bit because it comes from a genre I don't really care for. The horror, it's a horror film, and I'm not the biggest horror fan unless it's done really well, and this one happened to be done so well, it knocked my socks off. Number 10 is It Follows. Did you see It Follows?
It Follows that I did not.
I understand why. A lot of people didn't.
We have no horror chick at chickflix.net, so we're always on the lookout. So maybe you can be a guest horror chick sometime.
It Follows is when you become it, and I won't tell you how that happens.
You can. It's okay. It wouldn't be a spoiler.
No, it wouldn't, but it's probably wouldn't also be appropriate either.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those its.
Gotcha.
But it doesn't run after you. It doesn't scare you in the middle of the night, unless it happens to catch up with you then, it just walks slowly and steadily toward you even in the middle of the day, and you're the only one who can see it, but if it catches you, it's going to do awful things to you, and you're not going to like that. But it was so well shot, the soundtrack is wonderful, I love the lead actress, everything about it just worked so well. I've surprised myself by putting a horror film on this list.
Well, I think the only time I ever put a horror film on the list was The Conjuring, and they're now doing The Conjuring 2, which is good. But that was sort of the only type of horror film that I really have ever liked. Not a fan of things like the Saw movies and, you know, and all the Halloween movies. So if I get a chance to see It Follows, would it be on an airplane or something?
I highly doubt it.
There'd be something weird following you on the plane.
It could. That scenario could happen in the film, but maybe that will become It Follows 2, It's Still Following.
Ah, gotcha. All right. Well, I will be on the lookout, maybe, but probably not.
All right, Hannah, what is your number nine?
So my number nine actually is very much on the arty mainstream divide, even verging towards arty, but nine is 99 Homes, a independent flick with Andrew Garfield, a.k.a. Spider-Man. And it, to me, is much better than The Big Short, which is getting all these rave reviews right now, because it actually puts a very human face on the housing crisis. And I just thought the performances were phenomenal. The story was very powerful, and it stuck with me. So it made my list.
99 Homes was a tough watch. A lot of people compare it to The Big Short. The Big Short is Wall Street, but 99 Homes is Main Street. You're in your house, you're in your slippers, and the sheriff knocks on the door and says, you have 2 minutes to get out of your house. It's no longer your house. You are evicted. It really packs a punch and hits you right in the gut.
It does. And then the Andrew Garfield character sort of makes a deal with the devil in order to try and get his home back. And he turns the tables on other people and has to be the one who's helping to evict them. But it just shows how tough decisions needed to be made and how easily it was for people to just go under in the midst of that collapsing market.
Yeah, you talk about Andrew Garfield a lot, but I actually liked his colleague in the film, Michael Shannon, a little bit more.
He was good too, and that's why I think the movie deserved to get a lot more recognition. I think it just sort of was one of those ones that fell through the cracks. A lot of people have not seen it, and both those performances were very good, and I could see Michael Shannon getting a Best Supporting Actor nod.
Well, here's just something surprising, Hannah. I'm going to say that's an outstanding pick.
Why, thank you. Well done. I like to put one or two in there just to throw you off.
Well, I think my number nine is going to throw you off a little bit, because it also comes from a genre, just like horror, that I don't usually put in a top 10, and it's an animated film, Inside Out. I love this movie, and I think it's because I might be biased. I have a little kid, and the themes it was talking about, the emotional roller coasters, the, you know, one day he'll lose his goofball island, and now I know why he gets so angry sometimes. It really hit home. I, you know, choked up a little bit. A lot of people in the audience were outright crying. This movie wowed me from start to finish.
It definitely wowed me too. So I will give you a hint that it is actually on my list. We're not quite there yet. But I agree that it was a very well done, very original animated movie. And I think that's why it resonated, is that it was just something that we hadn't seen yet. And the idea that you can't have joy without sadness, and it really explains it on a level that kids can grasp, but that adults could really appreciate too. So definitely a good pick.
And if you didn't think you would ever be sad or get choked up at the death of a character called Bing Bong, you might be surprised.
Wow, I didn't even remember Bing Bong, but I'm sure that I probably did well up a few times during the course of that movie. So it was a good one.
All right, well, what is your number eight?
So my number eight is actually, kind of surprisingly, yet another sort of indie foreign film. Not foreign.
What are
indie.
You doing? Indie films?
I know, but I think this is the last of the indie ones on my list. But it was another one that just absolutely stuck with me, and that was Room. And for, again, the same reason as I think 99 Homes did, is it just had spectacular performances. I knew nothing about the movie going into it. I had not and still have not read the book. And so I just definitely got wrapped up in it, and I found it to be a very compelling drama about, you know, a woman who was basically a sex slave trapped in this room for several years with her son. And then the second half of the movie was really all about what happens when they get out. And that doesn't turn out to be, you know, all, you know, sunshine and whistles either. It was a tough transition, even when she did find freedom again. And so again, just Brie Larson and as the woman main character, and Jacob Tremblay as the kid, as her son, absolutely makes this movie. If you had not had such an amazingly well-cast kid, then this movie might not have worked. But I think he was phenomenal.
Room scared the hell out of me, even though it's not a horror film. I think it was the scariest film of the year. I knew going in, I didn't want to see it, because I knew it was about a woman and a kid in a garden shed for, you know, 5-7 years. And that's all I knew. I didn't know if they got out. I didn't know if they died or anything. And it turned out I really liked it. I didn't love it. I never want to watch it again.
Right.
Because it's such a tough watch. But it's one of those movies, I think you do have to get a glass of wine, sit down, make yourself press play, and get through it. Because it's worth it.
Yes.
But it's such a tough watch.
You do have to be, unfortunately, captivated in order to watch this movie. So it does not work, I don't think, as one of those ones that you would pause periodically on Netflix or something. I think you need to commit to watching it. And it was not one that I will ever actually seek out to watch again either. It was difficult to watch, but the payoff is there.
The kid, you're right, was fantastic. I can't believe they found a 5-year-old who was able to do what he did.
Yeah.
And the climax, not to give too much away, happens right in smack dab in the middle of the film. And I don't think I breathed once. It was so intense, mm-hmm. Perhaps the most intense sequence of the entire year in any film.
Absolutely, I agree.
All right, my number 8, I'm going to guess. In fact, I don't even have to guess. There's no way you have seen this foreign, obscure, hardly anyone has seen this film.
All right, go for it.
All right, well, it even has a couple names. In the U.S., it was released as Jafar Panahi's Taxi.
I didn't see that one.
I think in Europe it's just Taxi, and in other places it's Tehran Taxi.
Didn't see any of those.
It takes place in Tehran. It's from an Iranian director, Jafar Panahi, playing himself. A couple years ago, he got in trouble with the theocratic government in Iran, and they banned him from filmmaking. So what he did was he did something a little bit sly to get around the ruling. He just set himself up as a cab driver driving around Tehran, and this is all scripted, even though it feels free-flowing and natural. People get in the back of his cab, he talks to them, something happens, and they get out of his cab, and that's it. That's the whole film, but it's slightly subversive. You know, mm-hmm. People getting in the back of his cab include, you know, a bootleg DVD guy, a woman whose husband just got in a motorcycle accident, and she's begging him to film his last will and testament, otherwise she won't get anything, and his brothers will get everything, and he picks up his niece who talks about her school assignments. It's a dash cam footage. You're watching him drive. You're watching people in the backseat. That's it. But it is fascinating filmmaking.
Okay. Well, that's why reality shows are so popular. They're kind of scripted, too. I hate to break it to you.
What?
Yep. I think they are.
But, I watched Joe Millionaire back in 2003. And you can't tell me.
That was, yes, no, of course not. All real. I don't want to spoil it for anyone.
Well, just know that there is this movie out there, Jafar Panahi's Taxi. Not a lot of people saw it. It might show up on Netflix one day. I really encourage you to sit down and enjoy it should you happen to stumble across it.
That one I'm more likely to check out than It Follows, so I will look for it.
I think that'd be a good double feature one night.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Hannah, your number 7 film.
So my number 7 is actually Inside Out, so we've already talked about that a bit. So I just put it up a couple of notches higher, and I did like it. And I think the fact that there was an animated movie out there this year that appealed to so many people makes it deserving of being on pretty much everyone's top 10 list, and also being nominated for Best Picture as opposed to Best Animated Picture. I think it was just a good, solid picture.
That might be a subject for a podcast coming up, maybe talking about the Oscars, but I know it will be nominated and probably win Best Animated Feature. Do you think it has any shot at Best Picture?
No, but I think it deserves to be considered.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. All right, my number seven is it's Artie. It's from one of my favorite contemporary directors, Noah Baumbach, starring Ben Stiller and Naomi Watts. It is called While We're Young.
Ah, yes.
Did you see this one?
I did indeed.
You did.
I didn't hate it.
So While We're Young is a pair of 40-somethings living in New York. They don't have any children, but they're steadily employed, and they become acquainted with and friends with a pair of 20-somethings, Adam Driver, who you most recently saw in Star Wars, and Amanda Seyfried. And the 20-somethings start influencing the 40-somethings, and they start acting younger and become pseudo-hipsters. And I found it so funny, so fresh. I laughed. I just really, something about this movie connected with me. I just loved it.
I liked it. I just didn't love it. So it didn't really, it wasn't one that when I was going through trying to come up with my list that I remembered without having to like look through my list of what I'd seen. And so pretty much anything that I put on my list, I had to really remember. And that one was quite a few months back. And I do remember liking it at the time and just thinking it was a fresh approach. And Adam Driver was definitely, you know, up and coming. And I do like him. He's very versatile. I've liked him in a lot of the things he's been in lately. So I do like it. So it's a fine choice. But yeah, didn't make my top 10.
It did come out in March, which is a long time ago in film issues. And unexpectedly, about halfway through, an actor we know from decades ago pops up, Charles Grodin, who we haven't seen in a film in a long time.
Yes, he looked a lot different than he did in Beethoven. This was not your Beethoven Charles Grodin. This was a much older Charles Grodin.
It is a much older Charles Grodin, but he comes in a bit part at the end, but a very effective part, I believe.
Absolutely.
All right, Hannah, what are we up to? Number six.
Okay, you're going to hate me because my number six is a three-way tie.
I'm checking the bylaws right
and
now.
And I know that I'm probably breaking every rule in the book. But again, because I don't think that top 10 lists necessarily are the most effective, because I think if you like movies, you like movies. If you happen to like 12, 15, or 18 movies, then hey, you should be able to name them all.
So you did make this a top 14
list. So I kind of did. But the thing with the three-way tie and where they fell on my list is that I think guilty pleasure popcorn movies really deserve to rank on these lists in a decent place, because those are the movies that people escape to and when they're just going to have fun and be entertained. And so here are my three. And they're all sort of, I think, they fall into that category. And that is Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, Avengers Age of Ultron, and Furious 7. And I think that with its implausibility and yet very effective and sweet tribute at the end to Paul Walker, that movie also just kind of stuck with me a little bit when I went back through my list. And I was like, wow, I came out of the theater liking all three of those movies, just having had fun.
You have thrown me for a loop, Hannah. This is the part of the podcast where I'm going to say, Hannah, you know what your problem is.
Yes, Charlie.
All right. Well, I like two out of three of those films. Yes. The biggest one being Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. Mm-hmm. I thought was really well done. It's not the best Mission Impossible, but it's certainly one of the better ones.
Yes.
Avengers Age of Ultron was, I liked it. It was okay. I think it's one of the lesser Avenger films. I didn't like that they created their own enemy. I thought that was silly, but it was loud and well enough done that I'll give you your popcorn check there. However, Furious 7.
Yes.
Hannah, I know it's sad. It's sad Paul Walker died, and they addressed it in a very serious and appropriate way. But top 10, Hannah?
That's why these three, I put them together as just three fun guilty pleasure movies that if anyone was looking for that type of movie to rent, to watch on an airplane, to stream, these are the kinds of movies that I think people just want to go and see and enjoy. And Mission Impossible Rogue Nation definitely is the best of those three. And I think anybody who thought they liked Spectre really should see Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, because it's a very similar story, much better done.
Mission Impossible was a little bit better than Spectre, which was surprisingly disappointing.
Absolutely.
But Furious 7. Oh, my goodness.
I know. I threw that in there just to drive you a little crazy.
I think you say you think popcorn
get it, drive
and main,
you a little crazy.
I'm tracking here.
This is why nobody likes to play with Charlie in a box.
Nobody wants to play with a Charlie in the box. If you know where that reference is from, kudos to you. But I think you have to work a little bit for a film to really hit you. And there's no work involved in Furious 7.
But sometimes no work is good work. That's my new motto.
We will disagree to disagree.
Absolutely.
All right, and my number six is, we've mentioned it offhand already, it is The Big Short. It's Wall Street. It's how the housing market almost tanked the entire American and global economy. Steve Carell, Christian Bale, Ryan Gosling talking some jargon and language you barely understand, but it just works. It's funny. It's from the director of Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and as well as Talladega Nights.
Ah, another classic.
Another classic. But it's the original source material was written by the guy, Michael Lewis, who also did Moneyball.
Mm-hmm.
And to help explain just the really complicated stuff they're talking about, which is mortgage-backed securities, consolidated debt obligations, out of nowhere, within a blink of an eye, they'll just say, and here to talk about this is Margot Robbie sipping champagne in a bathtub. Or Selena Gomez in a casino.
It's Anthony Bourdain.
It's weird. It shouldn't work. But for me, it worked and it served its purpose. It made me angry. It made me so angry that these crooks got away with everything. No one went to jail. They almost tanked the entire economy. Hundreds, thousands of people lost pensions because of this. Their houses, such as 99 Homes. And nothing happened. It will probably happen again.
That's true, and there is something to be said for those movies that inspire people to be angry and to try and make a change. And it's a great way to try and tell a very complicated story. Again, if this were a top 15 list, it probably would have made mine.
I think your list is already a top 19. I just have that. I have a feeling.
Nope.
All right. Well, we are surprisingly halfway done already. I'm halfway dying because I think I will be dying by the end of this to hear your top five. So, Hannah, hit me with your number five.
Number five is Creed, bringing Rocky back. I actually, from a nostalgia perspective and also from a franchise perspective, I was pleasantly surprised by this movie. I thought that it does a great job of rebooting the franchise, still giving Sylvester Stallone something to do. He becomes the mentor to Michael B. Anthony.
Michael B. Jordan.
Michael B. Jordan. Why do I say Michael? Whatever. Michael B. Jordan. Sorry, Michael. Anyway, Michael B. Jordan is a great role, and he plays Apollo Creed's son that we never knew he had in the past five or six movies. What is it, six, seven? Yeah, I think this is technically Rocky 7, but it's just a really sweet, nice boxing movie. And so I call it it's one that I put into this realm of a chick flick wrapped in a sports movie.
I'm surprised at the number of sequels on your list. We have Mission Impossible 5, Furious 7, Avengers 16, and now Rocky 7. I really enjoyed seeing Michael B. Jordan. I remember him from 2013's Fruitvale Station,
mm-hmm.
an actual indie film, but a very hard-hitting, dramatic indie film. I haven't seen Creed. I have not seen it. I really want to because I hear Sylvester Stallone did such a good job, and I almost halfway avoided it because it's Rocky VII, and Sylvester Stallone is that guy from Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. And, you know, and to hear that he's actually really good makes me think I missed something special here.
It's good because it really is a throwback to the vibe of the first one. I would almost say it was sort of more a vibe of the combination of Rocky 1 and Rocky 2. But because Rocky 1 was definitely much grittier than this one. This one isn't all that gritty. But it just sets the stage for, I think, a new generation to appreciate the story of the comeback fighter, and people, anyone from Philadelphia is going to absolutely love this movie. Philadelphia is a central character much the same way it was in the original Rocky movies.
Now, Rocky films are known for their really long but awesome montage sequences. Do we get a montage sequence or four in this movie?
You get a few that definitely make you chuckle when the character's running down, when the Creed character's running down the streets of Philadelphia in his gray workout outfit, because you're like, I think I've seen this somewhere before. So, yes, it's another sequel technically, but I think when you finally have a sequel that is successful and that brings back all the best parts of a franchise, then it deserves some recognition.
Outstanding. Well, I look forward to seeing it. My number five, I'm going to guess you haven't seen it, but you never know. It's possible. It got a lot of awards buzz in the last month or two. It's called Tangerine.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen Tangerine?
I saw the first three quarters of Tangerine.
Oh,
maybe
Anna,
the first half.
I don't like where this is going, but it made me feel just so good. And I identify with no one in this movie. We have nothing in common. It takes place in Los Angeles in one day. I think it's Christmas Eve. It's shot on a pair of iPhone 5s. So ultra micro budget, two unknown actresses, Maya Taylor, and I forget her full name, but Kiki Rodriguez is the other one. And they are so funny and so alive. They're two transgendered actresses who just, one recently gets out of prison after a couple weeks and she learns her boyfriend slash pimp has been cheating and she's now on the warpath, and just, it takes place in just one day from morning to night, and I laughed. I grew to love these ladies. I had such a good time.
I lived in LA for a while, so I actually did have fun watching a lot of the action that was just going on as they were walking down the streets of LA. But for some reason, I just could not get into it. I tried. I just didn't get it. And I knew that some people had loved it. And I was sitting there watching it with a couple other people. We just looked at each other, and granted, it was a screener, so I was able to turn it off. I think there is a difference sometimes when you're inside a theater. You do give things more of a chance to see them through. It's also why I don't think somebody who necessarily would watch this one on, you know, on Netflix or, you know, just somewhere where they could stop and start it again, I think they'd give up too.
Well, I saw it on a screener too, and it was over so quick. You know, it's an hour and a half, and I wish it only felt like 20 minutes to me, because it
really
moves so fast, and it's so creative and original. I've never seen anything like this before. I didn't really want to watch it because I read the quick one paragraph. So don't let that fool you. You'll have a really good time watching this. And a lot of people agree with me because there's a lot of Independent Spirit Awards following this. There are Oscar campaigns for these ladies. I really hope all the best comes out of this little, small, tiny film.
I just didn't see what made it Oscar buzzworthy. And so the fact that we got this screener for it and that there was so much, what I consider to be somewhat generated buzz about it, I was expecting something different. I don't know exactly what, but it just did not, it didn't grab me amidst the dozens of other movies I was trying to watch that same week.
Well, this is far from the only time we're going to disagree on this list, but I think this is one of the biggest disagreements. I cannot believe you didn't even finish this movie.
I have nothing against tangerines, though. I think they're a wonderful fruit.
I think it's only called tangerine because of the color palette the director chose to use, but we'll get into that later.
Okay, that's fascinating to know, so thank you.
That sounds like sarcasm.
Never.
All right, now we're really getting up there. You're number four, Hannah.
So my number four will probably surprise you. Again, when I was going through what I had seen, this one jumped out at me as like, how could I forget to put this on my list initially? And it is the only documentary film on my list, and it is Best of Enemies. And it was the opening night film at the AFI Film Docs, and it was a wonderful documentary about a story that I'd really not been aware of up until this point. It's about the 1968 pundit debates, really, between Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley. So it's a smart, funny, timely, in its own way, movie, and was just one of the best and most entertaining and smart documentaries I've seen in a long time.
I love this documentary, Hannah. No documentaries made my top 10 list, but this one made my, actually, top three documentaries. It's so good. Vidal and Buckley, accidentally, I think, in 1968 at these debates, created what we have now, the screamathons on the 24-hour news cycle, you know, the Bill O'Reillys, the Keith Olbermans, they didn't mean to, maybe, but they created it.
Yes.
And yeah, I'm really glad you remembered this one. It's really well done. I expect to see it get nominated for a Best Documentary Oscar. I hope it does.
It should. And again, it's one of those movies that you shouldn't necessarily pigeonhole it because it's a documentary. It was definitely one of my favorite movies of the year.
Outstanding. No, I have no problem with that at all. However, wait till we get to my number four.
Okay.
So if you thought It Follows and While We're Young and Tangerine were a little bit on the arty side, wait mm-hmm. until you... I don't even know if you've seen this.
Oh, I'm scared. Go for
number
it.
Number four is The Tribe.
Have absolutely no idea what that one is.
Oh, all right. You're going to love this. I can't wait to tell you this. The Tribe is from Ukraine. And I can't say it's in Ukrainian because it's not in anything. It's in sign language, and it's not in American sign language. It's in Ukrainian sign language, and there are no subtitles. You do not know what they're saying. They're talking to each other in Ukrainian sign language, and you just kind of have to figure it out. And the fascinating thing is, you know everything they're saying. There are no subtitles. You don't speak Ukrainian sign language, but you know exactly what they are saying to each other. It takes place in a boarding school. A new kid shows up trying to get in with the in crowd, and he finds out what they're all really up to. The lack of adult supervision is a bit surprising, but I loved these kids. None of them had ever acted before. They're all deaf. They're all Ukrainian. And I guess the director just had to hope they were speaking the dialogue he had written for them in their Ukrainian sign language, because he didn't speak Ukrainian sign language. And the whole thing was one of the most eye-opening experiences I had all year in the film world.
Huh. Never heard of it, but
I get
I'm
that
sure,
reaction a lot.
I suspect there are some folks out there, though, that based on your explanation there, will seek it out, because it does sound certainly unique. How a movie that doesn't have subtitles and is in a language you can't understand and with a storyline we don't really know about makes top four? Was that your top four?
It was number four, and it has a couple nominations already out there. People, whoever happens to accidentally see this movie, love this movie.
Uh-huh.
I'm not the only one who really found a connection with The Tribe. It gets violent. There are scenes that are not pleasant to watch. And you don't think, what do you mean I can't understand them? They're talking sign language, and I can't read words of what they're saying? And that, I think, is the most fascinating choice by the director, who it was a very brave thing to do, and it works.
Okay. Well, I can keep Furious 7 and you can keep The Tribe.
Oh, Hannah, you just mentioned The Tribe and Furious 7 in the same sentence. Oh, well.
Sorry.
Hit me now. All right, now we're really up there. Your top three. Number three, Hannah.
I think you're going to like my number three. It's Spotlight. And I think that showed the power of a good, real, simple story with a great ensemble cast, sort of in an All the President's Men vein. And the whole cast is really good. Mark Ruffalo is phenomenal in it. And I just think that it's rare for a media organization to actually devote the time and the resources that the Boston Globe did to expose the story of the pedophile priests in the Boston area, and ultimately way beyond Boston as well. And it just is one of those powerful stories that shows what a difference a couple of people really can make if they're given the tools. And I don't think it really happens anymore. And I think most media organizations would not be willing to sacrifice the time and the money necessary to expose these stories anymore, and I think that's a shame.
Certainly, you would never read a story like this on an internet BuzzFeed website, but
nope.
I really like Spotlight. I'm glad you put it on your top 10. I didn't put it on mine, but I think it does deserve the recognition. It's one of the better ensemble casts of the year, and I think Mark Ruffalo is the biggest standout of all the people you could have picked. He was very effective as the dive-in-the-books, go-get-em reporter. And I knew what it was about. Never read stories about it before. Okay, I get it. They're pedophile priests in the Catholic Church and a lot more in Boston than maybe other cities. But I didn't realize how unsettling it would be. I mean, it really turned out the length that the Catholic Church went to hush this up. And even more than that, the city fathers of Boston and politicians that knew what was going on but really wanted to keep this quiet was so unsettling.
Well, and also the missteps by the media initially in failing to tell the story that they had an inkling of for a long time before. And the pressures that the media face when they're actually having to interact and sometimes be in cahoots in some ways with the very people that they then are responsible for exposing. And so I think it just showed how slippery a slope that the media landscape can be. And I'm just glad that that this story was told so effectively.
Outstanding. Well, shockingly enough, well done on your number three, Hannah.
Thank you. I try.
All right. My number three is, surprisingly, a science fiction film, one that generated a lot of buzz in 2015. It's called Ex Machina. Uh-huh. Oscar Isaac is a recluse, kind of Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, if they never gave interviews and hid out in the woods in Alaska. And he created a functioning, human-looking artificial intelligence. And he flies in one of his employees, a computer programmer played by Donal Gleason, and he wants to see the two of them interact. Donal Gleason's giving her a Turing test to see if she acts and is believable as human. And she, by the way, is Alicia Vikander. We've talked about her already. She is fascinating. I think she's gives the best supporting actress role of the year in this film. The themes and issues it touches on about humanity and eventually just psychological cohesion it gets almost unsettling after a while, but it's so hard-hitting and well done. I loved Ex Machina.
Well, Ex Machina is one of those ones that is in my pile that I still have been meaning to see, and I've heard good things about it, and I will try to see it, especially because I have become a huge fan of Alicia Vikander. I saw her in The Danish Girl. She steals that movie. As much as I love Eddie Redmayne, who stars in that movie, I think she steals the show, and I think she could end up with a Best Supporting nomination for that movie instead or in addition. And I just hope she doesn't cancel herself out, because I think she's showing that she's an incredibly versatile actress and definitely one to watch in the years ahead.
I hope she gets nominated twice. She was much better than Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl, which was kind of a lackluster, boring film.
Oh, I disagree. In fact, if I had a top 16, I think Anna. The Danish Girl would definitely be on there. It's in my honorable mention list for sure. Oh. I think that movie was excellent, and it just didn't quite rise to the level of my favorites of the year, but I did absolutely think that it was a powerful movie, and that her performance in particular just made it even better.
All right. Well, penultimate, wow me with your number two.
So number two, I give to Star Wars: The Force Awakens. Now, I know it's another safe pick, but it was way better than I expected, considering I don't think I've watched a Star Wars movie since The Empire Strikes Back in 1980. I did see the original. I do remember the original to some degree, but I am not a fanboy. I'm not one of these people that was obsessed with going to see it immediately, even though I did. And I just think that it hit all the right notes for a reboot. And it is essentially a retread of the original, but I think that's okay, because it also brings out a kick-ass new heroine in the character of Rey. And I'm blanking on what's her name?
Daisy Ridley.
Daisy Ridley. I knew you'd remember Daisy.
Oh, I remember Daisy.
So and it has Adam Driver in it, you know, which is never a bad thing. And I thought Harrison Ford, even though at times I almost felt like he was phoning it in just a little, him and Chewie, I found their performances were entertaining and a throwback to it was just solid and fun. And you laugh, you cry, you get nostalgic, and you look forward to where these characters are going to go next. And so I think it did everything that it needed to do to live up to the hype.
First of all, how do you critique Chewbacca's acting? That's
he phoned it in.
I'm sure he did in all those Wookiee movies you've seen. It is safe. It is a sequel. We've got Fury 7. We got Rocky 7. We got Star Wars 7. It is a complete reboot, retread of Episode 4, A New Hope, which is, you know, not at all bad because that's such a good movie. And I liked this Star Wars. I thought it was very well done. I was happy to see all of these characters again. I got choked up. I loved Daisy Ridley, probably more than anyone. I'm so happy this character now exists, a young kick-ass female ready to throw her lightsaber around and get some stuff done. But top 10? No.
Not only top 10, but I put it up there because...
No. Better than Ukrainian sign language, Hannah?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, because you kind of knew what they were saying most of the time, even without...
So you knew what Chewbacca was saying.
The hand gestures were very different in this movie, but... You're the one who's got a little BB-8 running around here somewhere, so I don't understand how you can be dissing my choice
that
when
was
I'm sitting here staring at a little BB-8 top.
That's
on
a
the
Christmas
table.
Toy for my kid to
don't
get him.
Don't blame it on the kid.
No, he doesn't know Star Wars yet, and I think this would be a good introduction. I liked the movie. I liked BB-8. I thought, you know, I was going to miss R2-D2, who only shows up a little bit. I'm like, how can this other droid take my love for R2-D2? But he does. It's a good film, but certainly not none of the two best of the year.
I put it up there because the expectations were so ridiculously high for this movie that to be able to meet the expectations for the majority of people, I have heard there are people who are upset with the movie and who feel like it was a total retread to the point where they did not like it at all. But I think the majority of people who have seen it have come out of that completely satisfied, and to me that's what a top 10 movie is all about.
Well, I'm glad you brought to our attention one of the under the radar indie films of the year in this thing called Star Wars because my number two is quite in line with the rest of my list today. It's called Youth. It stars Michael Caine. It is by an Italian director named Paolo Sorrentino. He won the Best Foreign Film Oscar in 2013 with The Great Beauty, and I liked Youth even better than I liked The Great Beauty, which is saying something. It takes place in a secluded spa in Switzerland, and you're just kind of watching people be people. There's Michael Caine, who's a retired composer. There's Harvey Keitel working on a script. Jane Fonda flies in for a scene stealer as one of his leading actresses. Rachel Weisz is Michael Caine's daughter, who gives him an earful. Paul Dano's walking around. It's hard to say what Youth is about, because it's not really about anything. It's just... It sounds really pretentious, but Sorrentino said he wanted to film art. And people think, oh, God, that's pretentious. He's trying to film the human soul. Well, I actually think he accidentally succeeded. He did film art. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. I love everything about Youth, and I'm dying to know what you think about it.
I actually got through about 2¾ of that one,
wow,
maybe.
Yeah.
I had heard that it was pretty good. I had heard that Jane Fonda's performance was excellent. And so 2 hours into it, when Jane Fonda had yet to appear, I didn't understand where in the world she'd be in this movie and how long it was going to go, and I had somewhere to be. So I'm afraid I popped out the screener and never got back to it. So I thought the first half hour, I thought this was going to be a phenomenal movie. I was totally ready to love this movie, and... it just didn't go anywhere that kept me invested. And so, yeah, I kind of gave up before the end.
Hannah, I find it challenging to discuss movies with someone who doesn't appear to like movies.
I love movies. I love movies for people who don't make them as high art. For instance, I think you'd like a movie directed by an auteur, and I prefer movies that are directed by directors.
I would love to see Paolo Sorrentino tackle Star Wars.
It's every once in a while a movie crosses that divide, and they've made my list. But when I come out of a movie and I go, huh? Then that to me is not a movie that I necessarily will recommend to others. And I feel I'm not so much a critic. I consider my reviews just these gut check reviews that are really designed to just give people an idea of whether they might like something and why, and whether they might not like something and why not. And then they've got folks like you to go to, and Artie Chick on our site, to to kind of get that arty perspective and let that influence their decision if it is meant to.
Well, Hannah, we've slogged through it. We've made it to the end. Wow me, amaze me with your number one film of 2015.
I am staying in the outer space genre and going with The Martian.
Ah.
All through the year, or through the past couple of months since this movie came out, that has stayed at the top of my list because it was that very rare combination of entertaining, smart, funny, good performances. It was inspirational in some ways. I felt that it was timely in some ways. And as improbable as the story was, it felt very accessible. And I just think that that was everything that just a good movie is supposed to be. And so it was my favorite of the year. I think Matt Damon puts in a phenomenal performance. It's understated, but he carries that movie on his shoulders. And he's, you know, a guy who has basically been left for dead on Mars when a manned mission to Mars goes awry. And then NASA discovers that he is indeed still alive. And the rest of the movie is about NASA's efforts to weigh the balance, pros and cons and money factor of bringing him home and trying to get him home. And it had that very Apollo 13-esque vibe to it. And just one of my all-time favorite movies. And it was just enjoyable and good, and everybody left that movie also just smiling, and I think that's a good number one.
Well, Hannah, I'm surprised and not surprised. I'm surprised because it's not a sequel, Hannah. You didn't give me a sequel on this one.
Well, see, I thought it was going to be about that TV show from back in the 60s. Wasn't it The Martian with Ray? What's his name? Oh, my gosh.
I'm before my time.
Oh, yeah, way before your time. But no, anyway. Not a sequel, and that's just it. It was a good... It had a lot of parallels to movies, to things we've seen before. But at the same time, I think people who read the book found it to be a very good adaptation. And people like me who had not read the book could enjoy it on its own.
Well, it's not surprising because I think it is a very safe pick. I think no one came out of The Martian saying, I didn't like The Martian. Everybody liked The Martian, but that's it. Everyone just liked The Martian. I liked it. It had one of the better ensemble casts. Matt Damon, Kristen Wiig, Jeff Daniels, Donald Glover's very funny in his little bit part. Jessica Chastain. They never really come together, but in their own separate spheres. Yeah, it worked. Bravo, Ridley Scott. You made a very good outer space movie. I liked it. It was very smart.
It was smart, and I think that it had all the ingredients of a good, mainstream, likable movie.
Well, The Martian was good, but it's nowhere compared to my number one.
Which scares me.
Which I think it could, you know, if more people actually gone to theater to see it, could have been mainstream.
Uh-huh.
Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs blew my hair back, knocked me off my feet. It's written by Aaron Sorkin, based on the book by Walter Isaacson. Michael Fassbender as Steve Jobs acts in a sort of three-act play. He's young. It all takes place at product launches. Young Steve Jobs right before the launch of the Macintosh. Then in something called the Next, which I don't even remember. And then right before the launch of the iMac. Man, Steve Jobs does not come off looking good. That man was an a-hole. He was not nice, but he was also a visionary. So how do you weigh and balance that? I don't know. Seth Rogen, he's a comic. What's he doing in here? Is great as Steve Wozniak. Michael Stuhlbarg comes in as a programmer. Three separate young girls play Steve Jobs' daughter. Catherine Waterston plays his suffering ex-girlfriend who, you know, even though she gave birth to his daughter, is on welfare, begging for scraps from this guy. And he doesn't treat anybody nice. He yells at everybody. Probably the worst boss you could ever have. But one that you probably want to work for just to be around the mind of Steve Jobs. And I'm tired of Steve Jobs movies. I did not see Jobs starring Ashton Kutcher. I did see Steve Jobs, The Man and the Machine, the documentary this year I thought was also very well done. But Steve Jobs is a film directed by Danny Boyle, who did Slumdog Millionaire. I was not expecting to like it as much as I did, and I liked it so much. I loved it. It is number one, with not even close.
Wow. Well, Charlie, if this were a top 20, Steve Jobs might have made it. I'm sorry. I think I was so burned out on Steve Jobs movies by the time this one rolled around that as good as I thought it was, I had seen his story way too many times in the past 2 years. So I had just come off of seeing the documentary Man and the Machine, which I actually was very disappointed in. I did not think it was a very well-made documentary. And then I actually thought the Ashton Kutcher version was also very well done. I thought Ashton Kutcher nailed Steve Jobs. There's a difference in the fact when you have somebody who looks so much like him playing him. That, I think, was the case with Ashton Kutcher. Michael Fassbender is the better actor, is a great actor, and I think he embodied this role very well. But I thought both of those movies, all three of the movies, made it very clear that he was not a nice person and he was majorly flawed. That's not to say I don't have all Apple products. You know, I love my Apple products, and I'm very glad that Steve Jobs created them. But I just think it was too much too soon about this guy, and that's why I just couldn't put it on any of my top lists, is I was just kind of tired of hearing about him.
Well, I think it proves the power of this film. I was Steve Jobs'd out. I was tired of it. I didn't want to hear any more about it, and all of a sudden, blindsided. It was so good.
I didn't really get that invested in it, and I did think that it was better at portraying the man than the Ashton Kutcher version. That movie, which I believe was just called Jobs, that one was more about the development of Apple as a business, whereas this one was definitely more about Steve Jobs, the man. And it's probably the best of the three, but again, it just, I think the fact that they're were already these other two movies, it just diminished the impact for me of this one.
Well, considering that it's my number one favorite, Hannah, I'm actually surprised you say you didn't hate it. So I'll take that as a win.
I think the fact that I saw it and it's your number one movie.
It's in English.
And it's in English. There were no subtitles and no sign language from what I can recall. So I respect your picks, Charlie.
Well, I think we have very unique top 10 lists. If you look at the other top 10 lists out there, you'll notice that we didn't talk about The Revenant. We didn't talk about Carol. Uh-huh. I mean, these are some major films out there that we left off our list.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. I mean, The Revenant I did see, and I just found it to be kind of bloody and weird.
I'll take
but
your
cinematically beautiful.
If this was a top 15 list.
If it was a top 25 list, The Revenant probably still would not be on it.
Oh, Hannah.
But I did appreciate it for its filmmaking. So it is a gorgeous movie. And I could appreciate, but so was Carol. Carol was a beautifully shot movie, but I just didn't really go for it.
Well, Hannah, thank you for taking so much time to come and chat film with me and making my blood boil a little bit.
Anytime, Charlie. Thank you for inviting me.
And I think that's a good recap of 2015. I think maybe next time we might talk about our top 10 worst movies of 2015. Just
I got
a hunch.
Few of those. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Steve Jobs makes your list, I might have to get up and take a stretch.
No, but it doesn't make, believe me, that one, there were too many others that, Vacation, but oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
I
shouldn't spoiler.
Have, I know, spoiler alert. Anyway, that wasn't the worst of them. So, absolutely.
Well, once again, this was Hannah Bookdahl with me from chickflix.net. I am Charlie Jewell from RadioSaintPete.com. And thank you very much for listening to our thoughts on 2015's films. Thank you very much.